and welcome into the newest edition of the Fantasy Alarm Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Colby Conway, at Colby R. Conway on Twitter. And before I introduce my guest here, a typical stalwart of the program, Matt Sells, little under the weather, recovering his voice, said he had a little bit of a cold. I think he just might have been yelling at the TV a little bit too much for baseball over the weekend, or if there were any NASCAR-related events. But alas, he's at the Sellsman on Twitter. Send him a tweet. Let him know you're thinking about him. Hope he gets better, and hopefully we'll hear his charming voice on next week's episode. But with me, as always, still no update on the Twitter handle, James Grande at the underscore real underscore Grande. So, James, how is everything going for you?
Everything's good, man. Another week. Another more disappointing losses for the Yankees, 2 to Oakland. So that's absolutely brutal. Or 2 to the Athletics. I don't know what I said. I might have said 2 to the Yankees, which they might be beating themselves too. But hopefully Matt feels better next week. And you know what? Take a week off, Matt, because next week, September call-ups. Matt, you know, Matt's like, this is Matt's favorite time of the year, September 1st. Some people like Christmas. You know, people are normal, like Christmas. Some people like Thanksgiving. Matt Sells' favorite day of the year is September 1st when the call-ups are here. So next week, Matt should be back with the voice rested and all the prospects being called up. So, yeah, everything's good on my end, and looking forward to get through this podcast with you, brother.
Yeah, and pretty much what we won't hear from Matt this week will be made up for in more than what we lost this week. Right. You may not hear me talk all that much next week other than basically just serving up Matt on players. And like, it could just be like a Matt insert prospect, please talk about him, and then Matt's gonna go on a tangent. Yeah. And then I'll say, that sounds great, should we add more fantasy teams? And then we're gonna go right on to the next one, and Matt will get to shine next week with the September calls. We do have a couple prospect notes here that we'll talk about here today, and we'll make sure we get Matt's take on them next week as well. Right. But before we talk about prospects, let's just jump right into it. Philly was able to welcome back Bryce Harper. One door opens, one door closes. The door on Zach Wheeler, unfortunately, had to close in this case as he heads to the IL with, I believe it was, forearm tendonitis. They lost me at forearm. Whenever I hear forearm, I know what the first thing I worry about long-term is going to be. Is there anything else that I've missed on Wheeler? I don't believe he's been ruled out for the season yet, but it's something that this has enough with the limited number of games that are left in the season. For fantasy purposes, he might just be all about done for us this season.
I mean, it's interesting what he was saying, how he was saying he was ready to pitch that day, that he was scratched and then ultimately placed on the IL. He said he's been dealt with this a lot throughout his career, which is...
That's not good.
Very concerning. But everything that he was also saying, like, makes it seem like he's going to pitch again. Now, this injury doesn't sound like it's a Nestor Cortez, like, just, you know, take some time off. It seems like a legitimate thing. But, yeah, who knows how long he's going to be out. There's not a lot of time left in the year. We have about a month left. So, I'm not dropping him right now. But if I don't have any available IL spots, then, you know, you got to do what you got to do at this point. You can't just hold on to someone that may or may not pitch again this year. So I agree. If you have the IL spot, I think he's a worthy hold. If you don't, I think you got to send him packing, because at this point, like, if you're fighting for your playoff life, or, you know, you need a regular season title is on the line and money's involved. I mean, drop Wheeler if you can't hold on to him. So
the hope, apparently everyone is very confident that he's going to make his start on September 6th, which comes against the Marlins, which would be a good matchup. There's a lot at play here. Like, he's going to miss a little bit of time. Right. Elbow's a little sore. A lot of questions. You're right. If you have the IL spots, there's no need to drop them. But at this point, like, I know one of my home leagues this week, as we're recording, is my last regular season game before the playoffs. If you're going to come into these games where every spot matters, holding Zach Wheeler for the hopes of getting him for your next matchup could be, you know, it could be the equivalent of the old, like, when I used to play travel baseball, you wanted to save your ace for the championship game.
Yep.
Well, if you don't win the semifinal game, it doesn't mean anything.
Yep.
Now you just saved him so that he can throw the first game on Saturday of the following week when it doesn't mean anything. So, that's kind of what it seems like to me. If you have the IL spot, yeah, go ahead and do it. And if you have other bad players on your IL who aren't going to make an impact in the week that lies ahead, drop them, move Wheeler there. But I don't want to be in a spot where I'm forced to either have to drop him or hold him with the hopes of that I can advance without a dominant start from Wheeler with my team. So it's tough at this point of the season. You're going to see bigger name players drop in your fantasy leagues because, again, we're down to, what, 35-ish games for most teams the rest of the way. So we'll have to see what happens there. But in New York, you kind of talked about one. Nestor Cortez has gone to the injured list. It's tough. Actually, let me say this. It's not tough. It's Murphy's Law. When you're a team that lacks pitching and you trade away pitching, the pitching that you have is inevitably going to deal with some hardship. So, you know, since the July 1st, Jameson Taillon has been abused by the long ball. Now, Nestor Cortez is injured. We're going to get to the bullpen in a second because I don't even know what you make of that. But Nestor Cortez, injured list due to a groin strain, hoping he will be able to return in September without a long stint on the injured list. What says you, James?
Oh, the injury's fabricated. Bull poop.
It's a Dodger phantom injury? Is that what we're talking about?
It's 100% a phantom injury. If you listen to Aaron Boone speak, if you listen to Nestor Cortez speak, if you watched Nestor Cortez the day he was placed on the IL, play catch and run in the outfield with Aaron Boone, with no limp. He's not walking around in any capacity like he's hurt. It's a phantom injury. The Yankees have openly talked about how they're worried about his innings and how this is he's already, you know, capped the most he's ever thrown. This is an absolute 15-day stretch of rest. I'm sure he's still getting his work. I don't believe this latest comment from Aaron Boone saying, oh, we're hopeful he comes back on the 15th day mark. Like, he's going to come back on the 15th day mark. Not concerned at all. But, you know, it obviously hurts our fantasy teams because, like we were just talking about Wheeler, if you're in a playoff position and need a start, you know, you have a tough dilemma on your hands. I like what we saw from Nestor Cortez. I mean, he had one of his best starts in quite a while prior to this IL stint. I'm not worried about him long term. The only thing we are really worrying about is does he have fantasy value for the rest of the year? I mean, what are you going to get out of him? 2-3 starts max? So that's something that you have to ask yourself. Is it worth keeping Nestor for 2-3 starts? Because that's what I assume he makes after he's back from the 15-day.
And again, if you're in a, obviously not in a roto format, but if you're in a matchup-based setup, you know, great, you might be able to get him back for maybe the championship game, but he'd be coming off missing multiple weeks, and that's assuming you even make it to the big dance. So, yeah, he might end up being dropped. Quick update on the Yankees bullpen. Looks like Clay Holmes is had a bullpen session. Looks like he could be joining the rotation. Whenever I think of Yankees and pitching, it's just rotation. That's the first thing my mind goes to. I don't even think about the bullpen. Yeah. But Holmes threw live BP, getting closer, should be ready to go here in no time. And then Aroldis Chapman, he's been hanging out with Chris Sale, it seems, with these like unfortunate injuries that come about. But don't get me wrong, I love the tattoo portrait of I believe it's his sister on his left calf. Love the sentiment there. But infection, he's now going to miss some time getting some antibiotics. And it's the loss of Chapman at this point in the season in 2022 has a much less of a sizable impact compared to like two or three years ago when Chapman was in his prime and was just a legit ninth inning dude. I mean, he's now throwing seventh inning. Like, he's just an arm in that bullpen at this point. He's not a difference maker, but he's going to be out for a little bit. Does this actually make the Yankees bullpen better, perhaps, that he maybe might not be pitching for a little bit? And obviously Holmes might be making his return if he can get back to where he was prior to the injury.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, I mean, seeing Chapman in games these days are brutal. It's watch through your fingers, right? Like, you got your left eye covered and your right eye looking through your middle finger and your ring finger. Yeah, he stinks. Hopefully Holmes can recapture. Hopefully Holmes can recapture form. It stinks to see Zach Britton was removed from his rehab outing over the weekend. So just another blow to the Yankees bullpen. But yeah, I mean, Chapman, his obviously, you know, when you throw 100 and you have a slider that you can control 50% of the time, like one day it's going to catch up to you and it's finally caught up to him. So this probably makes the bullpen better. We probably see, you know, more Trevino, more Efros, and hopefully prime Clay Holmes. Like, we got Yankees Clay Holmes in the beginning of the year, and then we got Pirates Clay Holmes before the injury. And we need Yankees Clay Holmes back, not Pirates Clay Holmes.
Yeah, and then in that same division, I don't know what else to say with Baltimore than they just continue to get it done. You know, Kyle Bradish has made good starts. Even Dean Kramer, who I try to pick against in DFS all the time, or at least I was. I've since learned my lesson, but he's even been serviceable. And the offense looks good. They have a couple top prospects, you know, Gunnar Henderson being the main one. So Baltimore keeps it going. They're right in the thick of things in the wild card race there in the American League. So we talked about it before, but as each passing week comes, Baltimore just continues to get it done, 6-4 in their last 10. So let me give you two yes or no questions. Does Baltimore sneak into the playoffs, and do we see Gunnar Henderson before season's end?
Oof. I'll start with the second one. I'm going to go no. And I think the general manager's comments are a little weird if they were going to be called, or if they were going to call him up, calling him like the youngest player in AAA. But that doesn't mean he wants to take away from what he's doing in AAA, but he's still the youngest player there. So I'll go no, he doesn't get called up, even though he's raking. They're a game and a half behind Toronto, who is, I guess, percentage points. So Seattle has the final spot. They're 2.5 back of Seattle. I'm going to go no on both, because I don't think Toronto's offense is going to be this bad. Like, they've been pretty bad lately. I think Seattle's offense will show up a little more than they have. So I'm going to go no. They're not going to get past the Rays. They're not going to get – they'll probably finish right where they are currently. But I don't think that they make the playoffs, and I don't think Henderson gets called up.
And then fantasy baseball managers. I mean, what Adley Rutschman has done after the first little bit after his call-up, obviously there's some growing pains there, but, I mean, he's been just – I don't even know how he's – phenomenal, I guess, is the only word that I can come up with. You just look at his numbers, and if it weren't for the struggles that he had early on when he first got called up and everybody was all really, you know, kind of worried about him. But when we're looking at his numbers just from July 1st, I'm refreshing my page here to make sure I'm accurate. But since July 1st, as a catcher, remind you, 278 average, 386 WOBA, 157 WRC+, 5 home runs, 2 stolen bases. I mean, where does he go behind the dish in drafts next year? He's going to be young. You got to think Baltimore is going to – I think that outlook on them is going to be more positive heading into next year. If we see any of those prospects come up, I mean, how high can Rutschman go in drafts next year as a premier offensive talent at a position that lacks, you know, well, high-end options and really depth, if we're being honest?
I mean, is it crazy to say that he's the top option on the board?
I don't think so. I mean, just think about it. If we go back, just even looking at the guys coming into this year behind the dish, Sal Perez is not going to be there.
No.
Real Muto, you have a case. He's going to be there. That's if they, Will Smith, Dalton Varsho, Wilson Contreras, my guy Wilson, Alejandro Kirk. I mean, Rutschman was looking at some NFC ADP data, looking at it here from October 2021 all the way through this season and such. I mean, there were times in drafts he was going right around the top 10 without ever even playing a Major League Baseball game. Now he has that underneath his belt. I mean, I'd say he's going to go in the top 5 at least, and, you know, he might not be 5, 4, or 3 in that scenario.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. He, like you said, he was what, aggregate, he was the 13th catcher off the board without knowing that he wasn't even going to start the year in the Major Leagues.
Yeah, so we looked from October 1st, 2021. Let me get back here to right before the season. We'll just put April 1st just to kind of ballpark it there and make for a nice number. From October 1st, 2021 to April 1 of 2022, Adley Rutschman was the 10th catcher off the board with no guarantee of being up for opening
zero.
Day.
Zero. I mean, he's the – so Salvi was a top 30 pick this year on almost all platforms, right? He was 26 on NFBC. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's going right there. That's you probably put him in that salary range. So what is that? Early third? You could probably see him sneak into late second. I mean, he's going to be, even with his bad start, and even though Julio Rodriguez has been tremendous, like, there's people like, oh, could Rutschman steal the AL Rookie of the Year away? It's like, hold on a second. I mean, he really could because he's been that good. So, yeah, I think he's the number one catcher off the board, probably early second or late second, early third, just like we saw Salvador Perez in 2021 drafts.
Yep, and of qualified catchers since July 1st, Rutschman is, you know, I said the 5 home runs, 2 stolen bases, but his 157 WRC plus is third, trailing only JT Realmuto and Sean Murphy, and his 2.7 WAR is tied for second behind the dish, again, behind Realmuto and right. Sean Murphy. So if we're looking at it now, I think knowing me, I might still lean Realmuto over Rutschman next season. But after that, I mean, even with Realmuto's case, you can make a legitimate argument for Rutschman to be perhaps a top catcher. Like, it's not outlandish. It's not something where I'm coming in here being like, well, you know, I'm looking here since July 1st, and I know Wilson Contreras has stunk, or MJ Melendez, so they're going to be my top guy. It's like, I love Contreras perhaps more than others, at least in this season I did. But it's Rutschman and Realmuto, two R's behind the plate, are going to be probably the two catchers off the board next year. But
yeah, I think it's interesting, too. Realmuto was quite bad to begin the year. He's just been great in the second half. So, you know, much like Rutschman, like, they both had like slow starts and then have been super good. So I don't disagree. I think there's a case for both, but I do think they're probably 1A, 1B in whatever way you want to dress that up.
And the recency bias with how Realmuto, if the season like were to end today, you know, Realmuto's quote end of year push is going to be something that people are going to think. And I mean, just using that same July 1st date, Realmuto has a .329 batting average with 9 home runs and 6 stolen bases behind the plate. That's going to get it done no matter how you look at it. Another prospect talk about, Corbin Carroll gets the call for the Diamondbacks. He was a consensus top prospect coming in. His minor league numbers, like most, are just outlandish.
Yep.
So he deserved, you know, all the pedigree with it. But this year in the minors across, you know, the leagues there, he's .307, 24 homers, 31 stolen bases. He's done that across a couple different campaigns. But we'll mostly look just at AAA here. 33 games there, .287 average with 7 homers and 11 stolen bases in only 33 games. Elite prospect. Arizona's got to play him every day. There's no point to call him up at this point of the season and not play him. So he's going to play every day. Obviously, we talked about it before. The must-add label is always tough because I'm not going to add, as much as I like Carroll as a prospect, I'm not going to add him if it means dropping Mike Trout or somebody because I have a loaded outfield. But if you need the help, he can impact your fantasy team across all 5 categories for the final month of the season. Absolutely.
Yeah. And any capacity that you need outfield help, he's a must add. How about that? In any way, shape or form you need outfield depth, he is a must add. But like you said, you're not dropping a top 25, 30 guy for him. But I mean, there's, if he's going to come up and hit home runs and steal bases at the clip that he's doing, you know, granted, I feel like sometimes the PCL could, you know, it definitely enhances people's numbers, but I mean, he's a top 20 prospect across the board for a reason. So,
yep. And like I said, all 5 categories, that is how he's going to get it done. That's going to be his claim to fame. And another outfielder in Arizona I'm interested, we might have to add him to this little segment we're going to come up here at the end, but Jake McCarthy has been really good. Now in deeper leagues, he might already be added, but I even think in shallower formats, it might be time to consider him. 68 games played this year, 4 homers, fine. Does have 12 stolen bases. He's hitting .291. He does have a .358 BABIP, which has given him a little bit of a boost there. And then his .298 expected WOBA is drastically different than his .344 WOBA, but 119 WRC plus indicates he is better than league average in terms of that. He's a guy that can get it done. He has no significant split advantage or disadvantage, hitting .300 against lefties and .289 against righties. Carroll's coming up. That's going to be another guy that's got to play. So we'll see what happens to McCarthy's at bats. But you got to think, and even perhaps now in shallower formats, if you need speed, McCarthy's a guy that should probably be owned in most formats.
Yeah. I mean, There's no doubt. I picked him up in a few leagues multiple weeks ago. As soon as they traded David Peralta, I was on McCarthy. 32 games, 10 stolen bases in the second half of the year. And that's after 32 first half games, only 2 stolen bases. So now that he's given the opportunity, hitting .333 since the break, Colby, like, the guy is doing everything. He's not a very powerful guy. He's not going to help you in terms of home run ratios. Does have 8 doubles since the break. So, like, you know, he does have some, you know, ability to hit the ball in the gap. But his bread and butter is the speed. And if he's also going to give you a 300-plus average, yeah, I think in all formats that you need speed and you need help in ratios in terms of average, I think McCarthy's a great pickup. I'm interested, like, if he's going to play this good, they're not going to bench him. Like, even with Corbin Carroll getting called up, like, they'll figure it out. I know Varsho's there and Alec Thomas and stuff, but, I mean, I just can't see them benching a guy that is just, you know, hitting 300 and giving them whatever they need offensively, like, in terms of, you know, getting on base, getting to second, putting himself in scoring position every time he's on base. So, yeah, I love Jake McCarthy in shallow formats. I love him in all formats.
Yep, and that speed is legit. In Kansas City, Brady Singer's really turned it around. I think I like him coming into the year a little bit of a slower start, and kind of just went through the summer months, but he's really, really picked it up of late. If you just go back to, just say, the start of July, it just seems like the pretty good time frame here. But in 10 starts since the calendar has flipped to July, 10.1 K per nine. Home run per nine is down underneath one, which is great. 2.14 ERA and a FIP and XFIP at 3 or in the low threes. Absolutely phenomenal for Kansas City. Fantasy managers who picked him up down the stretch here have enjoyed it, as he has at least 5 strikeouts in all but one of his last 10 starts. Looking at it here, with a couple sevens and a 9 even mixed in there. So Brady Singer has really emerged for Kansas City. It'll be interesting to see what happens with him. As a, you know, 26-year-old, can Kansas City put enough around him to help him out, you know, moving forward? Because despite the 10 starts, he is 4-1, but that offense just doesn't do much for him. He doesn't get a ton of help. So what can happen with him down the rest of the way? He's going to be good for strikeout. He should continue to pitch well. But more so looking into 2023, what can we expect with Singer?
I mean, the stuff is there. The stuff's always been there, and he's just putting it together now. Still going to be 26 years old going into next season. I like him quite a bit. If the strikeout stuff is going to continue, I mean, 29% K rate since the break. If that's going to be something that he can hang his hat on, and he's been more dominant against lefties too, which, I mean, keep stockpiling lefties against him, and he's going to keep mowing them down. I think there's a lot to like next year in terms of, like, how to assess him. I mean, he's not going to, like, you don't, you're not going to need to take him in the first 100 picks of next year's draft, but I could see him being, what, a top 50 pitcher next year. I mean, coming into the year, the 50th pitcher drafted this year was Logan Gilbert, right? That was your SP 50 I guess that's including relievers. So just pitcher 50. I mean, if he's, no, I could see myself taking Brady Singer. You can get Brady Singer after that, most likely. I mean, sign me up. A lot of strikeout upside. He's going to be, you know, he's going to be for me, Colby. He's going to be the 2023 version of what I wanted Patrick Sandoval to be in 2022.
I can definitely see that. One thing I did find interesting with Singer, when you look at his pitch usage this year, is going from June, he's used his slider a little bit more. The changeup's dropped a little bit. He hardly throws his four-seamer at all. He's just sinker, slider, changeup, and just the development there. He always needed that third pitch. That was pretty much it. When you look even back in 2021, sinker and slider was 96% of what he threw. Right. So just adding a tertiary option in there is what he needed, and that's, I don't want to say fueled it, but it's definitely noticeable here in the later months of the season. One thing I do want to add, this actually popped up in our Discord. Shout out Pete Cole for the update here. But Tony Gonsolin was scratched from Monday's start. Mm-hmm. He goes to the IL. Dodgers are known for phantom stints. However, I hate the term for him, which I've already said with Zach Wheeler. Right. And Gonsolin has been nothing short of good and lucky for the Dodgers this season. He's been good. Don't get me wrong. But
16-1, Colby.
Yeah, for sure. He's been good. I mean, there's definitely some elements of luck involved. Sometimes better to be lucky than good. He has been good. You don't trip and fall into a 16-1 record. I'll give him that. But he's on the IL now, and we've talked about the Dodgers so much in terms of their pitching staff. I don't know how many more injuries they can endure. They're still making the postseason. That's not really a question at this point. They're going to be fine. But once we get in to October, do the Dodgers have enough horses to make a run at this thing?
So I find this interesting because he threw 77 pitches his last game. And they were up 7-1, and he got through five innings against Milwaukee of just one-run baseball, and they were just like, they just pulled the plug. And I think you're spot on. I think it's completely an innings thing. I almost think there's no question about it because there's been no history. I mean, I know he has a history of injury, so I guess that's scary, and I know the forearm is also scary. But this year he's been, since, you know, he's been in good form. This just feels weird. Just feels like a phantom injury. I think if he's back by the time the playoffs come around, I do think they have enough. We've talked about it a bunch. Like, they're going to get Kershaw back for the postseason, albeit, you know, in whatever limitations he may endure. But if him, Tyler Anderson continue to pitch well, Dustin May, you know, in the back pocket, and then Julio Urias, they've all been super good. So, they're obviously, it's going to be tough to, like, match up against the Mets. So hopefully, you know, if they're sitting there thinking, like, let's not match up with the Mets because that is not fun. But, you know, as long as Gonsolin comes back and this is, you know, just either fatigue or just a phantom injury, I think they should be fine. But it does probably hinge on Gonsolin's health going into next year as well.
And it's looking at the numbers, like back in 2018 in the minors, he did log about 128 innings. 2019, it was 81. 2020, just 46, but that's a shortened season. And then 2021, including trips in the minors and stuff, we're only looking at 67 innings pitched last year, give or take, you know, adding some of the extra outs and stuff. So say right around 70. And then in the, let's see, in the postseason, he added four. So we're talking low to mid 70s in innings last year, and we're up to 128 this year, which is a career high at this point in terms of major league workload. I think there definitely could be, here's the thing. I think both of the following statements can be true in that it's a reason to rest him a little bit and that there is maybe something, maybe a little twinge in the forearm. I think both statements can be true, but the Dodgers have to get arms healthy for October. That's what it comes down to. That is what the, that's what they're doing here. James, let's talk a little bit here about a little players to add or not to add, a little homage to Shakespeare there with the to add or not to add, with switching out a little bit of the words there. So let's start with your boy Lars that you love to talk about. I think I see you talking about him in the Discord a good bit every now and then. 24-year-old outfielder in St. Louis. I know personally when I see a right-hander on the mound, he is an interesting play for DFS purposes. But should fantasy baseball managers, obviously daily setups, I think I know the answer here. But tell me about the St. Louis's outfielder who goes by Lars.
Yeah, I mean, he's an ad. He has been tremendous in the second half of the year in the power department. He does have a little speed, two stolen bases since the break, too. I mean, 961 OPS, 257 ISO, 409 WOBA. They started hitting him leadoff against right-handed pitchers. There's really nothing to dislike. You know, anyone hitting in front of Goldschmidt and Arenado are going to score if they reach base. So he's going to help you in the runs department. He's going to drive in his own runs because he's a super powerful dude against right-handed pitching, specifically all nine home runs hitting against righties this year. And he has some speed too. So yeah, I think Lars Nootbaar is a 100% add. Again, must add is tricky, but if you need outfielders, no question about it. And he's probably the most popular add right now in the outfield. So I think no doubt down the stretch run, Lars Nootbaar, one of the best pickups on the waiver wire right now.
He's one of them. If I had to guess, Corbin Carroll is probably going to be.
Fair.
Because you know how everyone is with their prospects.
Yep.
You know, they get all giddy like Matt Sells does.
Yeah, but that's two different things. But those are two things. Two different things. The best pickup and the person the people want the most, two different things. And I'm not saying Carroll won't be better than Nootbaar, but we're seeing the major league production from Nootbaar right now, whereas we have to see it from Carroll. Like, we have no evidence that he won't be Jared Kelnick, right? So, you know, it take and one is going into Arizona's offense, which has not seen Lewis's offense. So, Nubar is definitely going to get more pitches to hit. I'll say that.
Yep. And then the only thing I'm just going to throw this out about Nubar, it's no knock on him. You know, he doesn't make the schedule. He hasn't faced Pittsburgh yet. I don't know if we can get a full evaluation until we see him. I remember Matt saying that St. Louis and Pittsburgh have a couple games down the stretch. So I think
the final six games, right? Because we were talking about the Pujols thing. It's like the last three are in Pittsburgh. The three before that are in St. Louis.
Yep. I'm gonna have to reserve my judgment until I see it then. But we'll see. No, he definitely a must-have, especially if your league does daily moves where you can just swap him in and out depending on the handedness of the opposing starter. Sign me up for Nubar against righties. In Tampa Bay, 27-year-old Harold Ramirez, his percentile rankings on Baseball Savant for Statcast are just, I love it. We have a second percentile chase rate. However, we're talking 92nd percentile max exit velocity, 95th percentile expected batting average, and somehow with the second percentile chase rate, we're talking about a 90th percentile strikeout rate. That is phenomenal. I mean, that's just, you know, I'm going to leave the zone all the time, but I know I'm not going to strike out. I'm just that dude, or he's him, I guess, as the people are saying now, the young kids out there trying to stay hip. But just a 14.5% strikeout rate, expected batting average of .288. He's hitting .325. You know, the home runs, stolen bases, you're not getting a ton there, but for me, he's an ad because we've seen it where you can use guys like him, even if you only benefit from the batting average. You know, somebody else on your team could be hitting .250, but be a power and stolen base machine. Use Ramirez's .325 batting average. Boom, you now have yourself an elite fantasy player. So for me, Ramirez is an ad. What about for you?
Same. He can't do you wrong. If he's going to continue to hit 300 plus every single month, every year this year, Colby, I think this has just been like so under the radar. Except for May, he's hit over 308. He hit 400 in July. He hit 369 in nice in June, and 309 and 308 so far in August. Like, again, you mentioned it. He's not going to hit for power, but he's hitting in the middle of a surging team. Tampa Bay just gets these guys by the truckload. Just let me Billy Bean, like, the Billy Bean method to every degree. Yandy Diaz, Harold, they're going to hit 300. They're not going to hit for a lot of power. And they're going to help you win baseball games. And they're going to help you win fantasy games. Like you said, he's going to continue to help out in the average department. So, yeah, I think Harold Ramirez is definitely an ad. And a lot of formats, he's going to have the first base and outfield eligibility too.
Yeah, that's the thing. You can't bank on the power production. Even going back to 2019, he has a ground ball rate of at least 50% every season. Yep. He's going to run into some home runs every now and again. Like in 2019, we saw him get to double digits. That's best case scenario. Yep. Add a couple stolen bases. His main fantasy value comes from his batting average. That's just what it is going to be with him. We have TJ Friedl in, I believe it is, 27-year-old Cincinnati. Looking at him here on the year. Two home runs, six stolen bases across 41 games, .252 batting average. Yeah, you know, so be it. But he is in Great American Small Park. So home contests are going to boost him up a good bit. And when you look at his splits, it looks like, I mean, he's got a good average against lefties, but his exposure to them has been kind of limited there. Yep. So what do we make of Friedl in Cincinnati? Obviously, the ballpark is a huge boost.
Yeah, I mean, I think what draws me to him is kind of we're not – the power seems a little fluky. I know there's not a lot of home runs on the year. He's only hit two in the last this year, and they've both come in the last 10 games. But he has a lot of speed, and we're getting that right now. I mean, just over the last 10 games, he has six extra base hits, two doubles, two triples, two home runs, and he has a stolen base over that span as well. He gets to hit in Great American from he hits, I think, from the left side. Yeah, I thought he was a switch hitter for a second, but he hits from the left side. I love that. Now, am I going out and dropping like anyone for him? No. But if you're really desperate for outfield help, I think Friedl is an ad Just based on his, 394 in the second half so far, Colby. 1,200 OPS over that span, 500 WOBA. I get it. 12-game sample, whatever it is. 12-game sample. And then on top of that, you get to play your home games in Great American. I think you could do worse. He's an ad. He's a fringe ad for me. But someone who can provide some speed and does have a little pop as well.
And then in Detroit, kind of similar to Brady Singer's, really come on here late. The offense is not going to put him in great spots for, you know, wins. When you look at some of his starts here, like against the Angels, you know, one earned run over seven innings and he gets stuck with a loss. You know, they're just there. It's going to happen with Matt Manning in Detroit. But since coming back here over his last five starts, we're talking a 2.4 ERA. The FIP is in the low threes, XFIP's up in the fours, but that is what it is. Doesn't generate a ton of ground balls, but he does have an 8.1 K per nine during that stretch. 291 BABIP isn't too bad there. And when you look at his plate discipline marks on Fangraphs, these are the numbers I love looking at. 33.3% O swing rate, so third of the time generating swings out of the zone with a 12.2% swinging strike rate. That's how you project the, you know, strikeout viability. You know, if someone has a lofty strikeout, they don't get many swings and misses. Eventually, it's going to come down. You got to miss bats to get strikeouts. That's the name of the game. And Manning can and has done that. He's only 24 years old, still growing into it. We've seen a little bit of him at the big league level. I would probably say most would categorize it as a little bit of hit or miss.
Yep.
Is probably the easiest way to describe it. I mean, 2021, there was just no strikeouts.
Yeah, more hits.
That was an outlier.
Definitely more miss than
More miss. But this year is the first kind of inkling of the hits that we are seeing. Still only a 7.3 K per nine in the year, but like I said, it's ticked up a little bit of late. So down the stretch, can Matt Manning be a help to fantasy teams in need of pitching?
Yep. And I think, I mean, that the K rate watered down by the beginning of the year. I mean, three appearances prior to the injury, or two appearances rather, two strikeouts in each. Like, since coming back, he had the one strikeout game against Minnesota, but 7-5-6-8 in the last four. And you mentioned only one of those games have been poor against the White Sox, four earned. So, and the ballpark in Chicago has been very hitter friendly this year. So, yeah, I think Manning can help. I mean, you guys, go to your waiver wire and look at starting pitching. It's bleak everywhere. It's terrible. There's no reason Detroit's not going to give Manning the ball every fifth day. And as you mentioned, he's generating 11.5% swinging strike rate. You love to see that. And, you know, coincidentally, the strikeouts are on the rise. So, yeah, I think Manning is an ad, especially just given how poor pitching is the rest of the year. And there's no reason not that he won't get, what, another five starts this year? I mean, if he continues to pitch this way, five plus strikeouts each, you know, in the last five starts of the year, I mean, that can really help going into your postseason run.
And then as we wrap up this week's episode of the Fantasy Alarm Fantasy Baseball Podcast, a quick level of concern, but I'm going to switch it up a little bit on you. So Justin Verlander left his last start with right calf discomfort. Obviously, the Astros need him for their hopeful push in the postseason. And Ronald Acuna has been dealing with quote-unquote sharp pains in his right knee that was surgically repaired. He says he's confident that he'll be in the lineup, whereas Verlander, the status is still a little mum there. So between the two of them, from a fantasy perspective, whom has a higher level of concern in your mind? Is it going to be Verlander with the calf or Acuna with the sharp pains in the knee?
I'm going to go Verlander because the expectation is Acuna's going to return. Whereas, like, we still don't know about Verlander and he's a lot older. Like, no offense to Verlander, but I mean, he's 39. And Acuna's expected to be in the lineup on Tuesday, so we're going to get another day off Monday. So I'll go Verlander until, but it's like kind of up in the air. Until we know more, I just feel like by default I have to go Justin Verlander.
I am as well, and I think that plays out in reality as well. I think it's unfair to say that the Braves don't need Acuna because they do, but if we're going to go comparison in a vacuum, I think the Braves can do it without Acuna. I do not think the Astros can do it without Verlander.
They did it last year.
And exactly. The Braves, they did. That they did. So I think that just rings true there again. So I think that is the move there. I think Verlander is the more worrisome one for the time being till we get some more information there. But you know, that is going to be it for this week's edition. Head over to fantasyalarm.com for all the baseball content. The draft guide is free. Check that out. We have all so much good content coming out there, and with the season right around the corner. Yes, my Texans went undefeated in the preseason, and you can win your fantasy football leagues just like the Texans did in the preseason, because I don't know when they'll win again. And you can, and you can, you know, use the draft guide, use the ultimate cheat sheet, check out all the content. It is a must for anyone that has your fantasy football drafts upcoming. So check that out. Get the free draft guide, fantasyalarm.com. Make sure you give James a follow as well at @_real_grande. Send Matt Sells a tweet at @thesellsman. Let him know you hope you feel better. And you just want, can't wait to hear his sweet, sweet voice talk about prospects in next week's edition of the Fantasy Alarm Fantasy Baseball Podcast. And give me a follow if you feel so inclined at Colby R. Conway. So that is it for this week. And we will see you next week with the next edition of the Fantasy Alarm Fantasy Baseball Podcast.